without being subject to winds. And that will be the ruling factor for rebirth. Okay. Until that state no longer has the condition to sustain itself.
And some of these other little colors will start to wiggle and squirm.
And that poison, or God, or whatever you want to call that kind of life in a boundless state, will, because what is the ruling factor is cause and effect. The sense of self comes and goes. Cause and effect cannot be stuck. There is continuously this dance of cause and effect, but no inherent self. So what do you do in a Buddhist practice, for example? Well, one of the things you do is you stop looking at what is present as something you like or dislike, and you realize what the motives are your only really powerful choice. What motives are operating within you? You realize that whatever action occurs, there will be a result from that action. And the action and the result have the same taste. So if you don't like a situation, you would prefer to not have that situation arise in the future. Practice equanimity with that situation. Well, you're not creating the seed of dislike, of narrowing down, of trying to get away. Understand? Now, if you perform a very heavy action called bodhisattva vow, where not only do you identify your own states of like and dislike, but immediately you understand that everybody else in this room is feeling exactly like you. That you begin to practice feeling the livingness of every other person here. That everyone here has as much potency of life inside their own being as you have right now. And that there is really no difference between you and other people. And as other people are subject to discomfort or suffering or blindness, it feels exactly like it feels for you. But at least you have heard some dharma, and you know that acting in a negative way toward discomfort does not get rid of it. Anger does not cease by anger, said the Buddha. Right? You've heard all those things before. So you say to yourself, as I feel the discomfort of this, at least I have the ability to look at it and know that this state is just one of many M&Ms. This state is imperfect. If I practice a sense of kindness and love as much as I am able, this state will pass. But many other people don't have that ability. Not only for myself, but for others, I would like to practice that sense of being present in refuge, not fixing things, not being responsible. To be loving, that's everything. Well, it isn't that it doesn't do. It does do. It makes you very good at being responsible for a few more lifetimes. Oh, you do be. Oh, I've got my position all mapped out. Get my mother and my dad all fixed up, and then next lifetime I will be the president of, and then after that. Or, to let go of that position, that role, whenever there's an I who has to do something, there is a lack of refuge, a lack of love, a lack of the sense that the universe is quite capable of doing. So I, come down really heavily sometimes with some people for that. Because for them, they need to see that really what your greatest practice can be is the practice of compassionate, non-clinging awareness. If you practice that, then you will perform an activity that makes all the M&Ms the same color. And all the M&Ms the same color inside or outside your body. Your memory isn't subject to conflicting emotional states. That's called choku. Rebirth is very specific. It is for the sake of compassion for all beings. So that's still not a self. It's just so much changing all the motivation toward the streaming of the entire universe toward awakening. It's not so much a self as it is an awareness of totality. So where could one go? It's kind of like a negative, like a photograph, you know, it's kind of like rather than the picture, it's like the negative of the picture that you have to look at. A sense of self does exist. It is a wonderful tool. Oops, gee, it's not permanent. But those streaming energies can go for lifetimes. And they are what we call yidam. So that's Dean. How's that? Is that nice? Thank you. Thanks for the M&Ms. Who gave me those? Perfect. Wasn't that just perfect? Anybody want some? Let me pass this tray around. Otto didn't begin. Go ahead. I'll eat the ones off the floor.
Thank you.
At the back there. M&M's at the back.
We're supposed
sort of like presenting the royal crown jewels, eh?
We're supposed to eat them?
If you want to. Don't hold them in your hand or put them in a pocket that's warm. They'll melt. If you want to, if you don't want them, it's okay.
Thank you.
So any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
This sense of responsibility.
This almost tastes like chai. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Like Tibetan tea.
Oh.
Yeah, it's almost salt. Maybe it's from the M&M. Sorry, Liam. Excuse me.
No problem.
I think you did. Try and treat teachers. Sorry, Wayne.
No problem,
darling. I just got out of the car.
Yeah, I got kids, I understand. The sense of obligation, you talked about that. I'm not sure if I understand which.
The difference between having a sense of self who must perform an action in order to protect one's position of being responsible for, and understanding that there is cause and effect, and that the greatest action one can perform is kindness. But if I think it's my duty to protect people from the world, there is something seriously wrong with my view. If I realize that the world is a better teacher than I will ever be, and have great joy in helping people become aware of the real guru, you know, it's very fine. It's a very fine line. It's very difficult to distinguish. How you can distinguish it is the feeling of hardness and the little rules creeping in.
Right.
I have to do this, he has to do that, she should do that, they should do that.
Right.
Whereas if you trust life as guru,
that life
then You know, the rules are whatever is present and how to act with kindness as it arises. That's the number one rule, kindness.
Or clinging on, compassionate clinging awareness. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Non-clinging, compassionate. Where's my tray? Oh, Andrea! Green!
Could you speak a bit more about the Eden as a manifestation of these, the energies that
Well, say, for example, that one's Yidam was something like Dorje Padma, for example. And then it is very likely that the person whose Yidam was Dorje Padma would have a really excellent intelligence, very sharp intelligence, discriminating mind, and an enormous belly of desire.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it? Is life really the greatest thing? Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? Okay, for example. So, but then what would happen is your Yidam represents, your strength and your weakness. Okay? Because if it's your strength, you probably use it when you shouldn't, rather than allowing other aspects of yourself to develop. Would you agree with that? Mm-hmm. For example, you know how much I hate talking about myself. So we'll switch Yidam to, my Yidam is Manjushri, peaceful Manjushri, of which there are many manifestations. Manjushri is the deity that represents discriminating wisdom. There's also the power of speech, which is very charming. You've all noticed that, of course. And a fine ability to discern differences. It is only Manjushri, the transcendent experience of discrimination, if there is a clear understanding of no inherent self. The absolute bottom line for the experience of Manjushri is to realize no inherent self. So that then what one is looking at is the continuous changing field of cause and effect, coming into existence and passing away, like billions and billions and billions of blinking lights. So one of the symbols of Manjushri is like Indra's net in the Hindu tradition, a three-dimensional net, at least three-dimensional net, of lights, and the nexus points go. Cause and effect, but no inherent self. So, from very early, and also the love of history, because that's also part of cause and effect, being able to see how the seeds of karma ripen. So, for myself, and as a very young child, I always wanted to know the reason why anybody was doing anything. And I love poetry, I love storytelling, I love, you know, somebody tells me a good story. My mother is a great storyteller. Any reference that happens in her storytelling
any reference to an actual event is very iffy and has always been, although my sister blames it on old age. I don't agree. But for me, it is one of the real beautiful things about her, watching her take intelligence and cause and effect and connecting the dots. And then poof, gone. It's such magic to me. I love it. And how to use speech, for the sake of liberation. If you are working the Manjushri principle, you use speech for the undoing, for the unraveling of seeds of karma, for the dissolution. So speech should not give answers. It should provide spaciousness. If you're a Manjushri type, but there's a lot of confusion about how to use the elements, then you're walking around with a bunch of answers. So, for example, for many years, I knew that I could give really good classes. It was obvious to me that I had done enough study of Dharma. And then I did a retreat one time, and these series of events occurred in meditation, and I realized that, I really had nothing to say. And then the next day, my beloved teacher, Namjo Rinpoche, said, "Well, I think it's time you start teaching." I said, "Oh, you should have asked me last week." Because this week, hey, yo. I don't know nothing. So, does that give you an example?
Yes.
And it is based on, for this lifetime, one of the strongest rebirth linking karma seeds of karma that are manifesting in this lifetime have to do with using speech in an unjust way. And wanting to use speech well. And that's a very powerful part of this being's whole life. From very young. First toy I got that I absolutely identified with, I used to sit on it when we had dinner so nobody would touch it except me, sleep with it, was a book. So within your own being, your propensities, if your yidam is something like, for example, white Tara, you probably have a really strong view of what is good and what is bad. And you probably need to move that out of that sense of rightness and identifying with that to the point of having a sense of the one taste of shunya and the many different energy fields in which it can arise. If your yidam is a Dorje Pomo, you probably have a very powerful desire and you probably keep frustrating yourself because you probably get tighter and tighter because you keep using your knife on your desire. It's not a good idea. How to allow the desire to be without a sense of inherent self. And you need to be just the clear discrimination of being in the present. The most powerful image I have of Dorje Paramo is interest. Total live interest in the present. You know, when you're totally interested in something and your mind cuts off everything else, but the desire is flowing through. And there, it is a wholesome state of consciousness. For example. For Mahakala, there would be that sense of really wanting to set clearly the distinction between between abusiveness and the right to learn. It's a doorway. Power over protection, or the fiery energy that can move through any experience. You understand what I mean by that? It's just like, could go either way. So it's a very wrathful. All of the idioms, in order to practice them, you have to be present. You have to actually be here. We all have to actually be here. Get most of those M&Ms, at least, interested in trying to manifest in the present. And as soon as you do that, you can feel the energy pick up, can't you? Do you understand what I'm saying? There are moments now when I'm talking where some of you are really right here listening to me, aren't you? You can feel the energy pick up, can't you? You feel the light change a little bit in the room, huh? That's radiant energy. That's what it means when it says in a text, I arise as ye dumb. I am no longer in the past or in the future. I am radiant energy in the present. I am the motive of being present. No little plans about what one needs to do because if or why. In the past or in the future. Radiantly present. Riding the river of the currents. With the motive of kindness. What could you do this for? Did you do anything that's wrong? So there's a nakedness to that kind of stance, isn't there? A letting go of how you usually think of yourself, what your worth is. But if your worth is based in relation to you, you don't lose it anyway. So practice in little increments, so it won't be such a shock to you. Just little ones. And they all dissolve. Leave you with a sweet taste. More M&M's anymore?
Thank you.
Any other questions? So when does planning into all of this? What you do is, like, if you bring yourself right into the present with openness and willingness, then your Vijnana consciousness will keep feeding into the present, past possibilities, but more than you would do if you were trying to figure something out before you were involved with it. If you try to figure something out before you're involved with it, your mind will bring forward from the past all the things it thinks you think might happen, not the experiences that are actually triggering, like memories. So you're narrowing your choices when you plan. And you're getting yourself fixated in something that is going to start feeling like a coffin. It's going to be very familiar. When you get into that very familiar figure, well, maybe I should try unknowing. So that's the only refuge there really can be. If refuge is from ritual, if refuge is from doing everything right, well, what happens when you're asleep? You know?
When you're not there. When I don't know what got into me.
What happens then? When some little brown one does it, you know? What then?
Okay. No, I do understand that mind state.
Yeah. And it's painful, it's a painful mind state. So a lot of what we call planning is what I was just attacking a while ago as responsibility. It's actually trying to maintain a position of rightness. Trying to maintain a position for whatever reason. For power, for love. I just thought of a bad joke, which I'm not going to tell.
What do you distinguish between discernment, though, as you've been talking about it, versus an idea like time and process? What's the distinction between the two?
If you're enjoying watching the process and you don't think you're right, if you're enjoying watching the process, I'll watch my mind shift through these and come up with an answer. That's discernment. You're discerning how consciousness, vijnana, how different parts of the mind work. And then there's a greater likelihood that you're going to practice kindness. If you're right, your view is so narrow that you can't necessarily be kind. If we are right about something, then there are a few sinners who are going to be in hell. Mm-hmm. Which means one part of ourselves is also in hell. So the whole thing is based on the experience of what is called shunya, of no inherent self, no fixed position to believe in and think that I must be this. Realizing that whatever the self is based on, according to Buddhism, three things. Present supporting circumstances, seeds of karma looking for a place to happen, and aspiration. There you go. And you know that's true. You know, a lawyer arguing a case in the middle of the afternoon is not the same self as a lawyer making love to his wife or girlfriend or her husband or boyfriend at 9 o'clock that evening with a bottle of wine or two under their belts, you know? The language is different. The mode, you know, the entire thing is a whole... Or a bus driver, or, you know, or you or I. Present supporting circumstances. It's a big part of what I am, isn't it? Present supporting circumstances. Seeds of karma ripening. And aspiration. You can feel a lot of sense of anger over something arising in you when present supporting circumstances trigger the anger. And you can also feel your choice, which is where the aspiration is. Wait a minute, wait a minute. Do I really want to dump on this person? Yes! No, no! On the street. It's basically what is the self. So there really needs to be a kind of a practice of being aware of all three of them and trying to have a kindness. If seeds of karma are ripening, you're going to ripen. What you can do is pray that they ripen. For the sake of compassion for all beings. Not to protect your own position. That's what I was getting at. I have my integrity, my or as I'm so fond of saying. No good. No good. That's not fair to you. That's too small a box to put the grandeur of the experience that you are in. Crate it up. Ship it down the line. No. Dance on a few constellations. Have a good time. And if you find something ripening in your life, do it for joy, not for duty. Mora, do it for joy. The joy of being able to perform a duty. Very good. Excellent. Is this reasonable? Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Are there in Galatians in the Bible where they talk about as you sow, so shall you reap, isn't it? So I think it's in the book of Galatians where there's that really clear statement, which in Buddhism is called karma, that forgiveness is forgiveness. But karma is karma. Forgiveness is the kindness of the heart and the aspiration to do better. But the present supporting circumstances are present supporting circumstances. a very infantile kind of mind, the spiritual mind. It's like the kindergarten of spirituality, where you think that because you're devoted, nothing will happen. And then you become trustworthy after you have enough experience in that realm. And you realize that devotion is your privilege and karma is karma. That you can meet the present circumstances, no matter what they are, with devotion because of the blessing of being able to practice awareness of aspiration and of all beings. What's the difference between devotion and trustworthiness? For a lot of people, when they begin a practice, they begin it with devotion. I would say 99.9%. Now, devotion is very much like children with parents. And it's devotion that we all survived our childhood, because we were certainly demanding, wouldn't you say? And if anybody over the age of 20 treated you like we all have treated our parents when we were like a week old. Change me! Feed me! That's enough! I want to go to sleep. I want to wake up! Continuous, right? And this devotion, which is lovely. It's a beautiful thing. But it is not the same thing as trustworthiness, which is where you are actively spiritual. When you're trustworthy, you're actively spiritual. You perform in the world in a true reflection of spiritual law. You understand that cause and effect is cause and effect. The world is trustworthy. If you spent, you know, I'm waiting for my hair to turn black and straight because I spent so much of my childhood wishing, praying that I would have straight black hair. But if not next lifetime, Chinese for sure. Because I was sure that would do it, eh? You know, if I could just wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and there'd be this straight black hair, oh, shoot. Everything would be okay. So, you know, I get struck by lightning or something and my hair will go straight and black. Seeds of karma will go right. And think of all the things at various ages that you have wished for. If you have the stomach for it, think of them. When are they going to come in, you know? I mean, they are. This world is the wish-fulfilling jewel. This heart is the wish-fulfilling jewel. What you ask for will arrive. You may not be here. Whoever you're making may be here. This lifetime might be a lot of reaping of whoever made you's desires. But it's inevitable. There is cause and effect. It is not insane. Absolutely trustworthy. How would you like the world to be? Well, I recommend the causal action that will create that world. Isn't it a nice idea, eh? We have power. So you have, you know, these teachings, like the seven offering bowls, which are, these are the outer offerings. These are how you work the outer world so that you can practice non-clinging. So the first bowl is water for what? Water for drinking. Why? Quench the thirst. What do the thirsts do? All the little desires coming up all the time. What do they do? They create some future and they take you out of the present. They take you out of your only place of power and they set up a field that's going to be full of just as many confusing crops as the present. So the very first action you have to do is just sit there, and when you see all the seeds arising, just give them a drink and bring them back into the present. When desire arises, quench it and bring it back to the present. No spiritual practice unless you do that. Number one offering. The bottom line, isn't it? Water. Now there are many ways that you can quench thirst. People are really dull minds. It's recommended they go chase all their fantasies. Like, for example, when I was living in Thailand, and I'd been ordained, and then I'd been reordained in Thailand, and, you know, I was studying with these wonderful teachers, and I was doing lots of meditation, and I was practicing this, and I was practicing that, and I was studying Buddha Dharma, going on alms round, and just getting my head shaved every month, and I would get to a certain point, and then this little niggle would come up, you know, well, here I am, I'm like 32 years old, and how was I, 32 somewhere around, and I never did get married. When things come up. Probably, you know, this is just a compensation. I really should get married. My father was Polish. You know, there were certain things that a daughter does. Like one of them is she doesn't leave home until she moves into her husband's house. So this is coming up. You know? So I got married, and since I was married, I have never had that. I don't in any way think that it's a good idea for me to get married, or that I'm missing anything, or that indeed I need to have a relationship with a member of the opposite sex. I mean, you know, certainly a relationship, but not a sexual relationship. Not a married relationship. I do not think that I cannot exist without a companion. And I swear to you, the only way through that fantasy for this dull mind was to get married, which I did. I worked hard at it after 6 years of obviously being married. Adria and I met when I was married, right? That's how long ago. We've known each other. So, you know, there are some thirsts that you quench by just doing them. There are some thirsts that you quench by cutting them off. You know, like you pay attention. But that's a very interesting bowl. Like if you are having problems in your life, check to see whether there are thirsts occurring that you're trying to ignore. Because there's arguing. They keep creating new fields. Water for drinking. And after you practice water for drinking, then comes water for washing. And it's usually the feet. Like clearly discerning, oh, this is where I'm standing. This is where I'm standing. Once you cut off the desire that keeps, you know, eating away at your sense, it makes you into a hungry ghost, right?
Over here, I wish I could have made it, I should.
Then you are in the position of power. Now you are actually riding the elephant. Now you are actually equipped with the vehicle. Water for washing, it's also respect. It's a very loving, paying attention to what this is. This is the vehicle. It's the first word when you're ordained is basically the first word. First word. Okay. Who's home? The first work of meditation. What is this? Until you know what this is, how are you going to know what you're looking at? You don't know what the eyes are that you're seeing with. Huh? Oh, I see you've got a lot of kind of bars over your body there. Must be hard going through doorways. So the second one, you cannot treat things appropriately until you perform. The first one, you have no power. The second one, you have no skill without performing. You have no intelligence. You might have all the right answers. You might be all together. Everything might be lined up. But unless you're doing that second one, about geometries and things like that, but basically the whole book was about the power of one point. And that's the second one. Second one. Third ball is what? It's the third ball. Come on, you can all look up there. Wow, thank you. There they are. Water for, what's the first one?
Drinking.
Second one? Water for washing. Third one?
Flowers.
The thing about flowers is that they are the movement of the plant. You know, they're the movement. Moving between leaf and seed. And they move. They're opening, they close, they react all the time to light. They always represent energy fields. And when you have the power to be present on the elephant, then you start feeling the movement of what is occurring. So with flowers, you give up relating to event as thing. So you're not quibbling about position. You see things as energy patterns rather than I am responsible. Or this is that. It's not a chess game. There are these interpenetrating energies. And everybody has as much right to learn as you do to direct. Right? Isn't that an interesting concept? What a concept. Life is an equal opportunity. Everybody has as much right to do as everyone else. The energy is always there, it's always changing, and how you're seeing the energy field dancing may not be how somebody else is. So don't impose your reality on an event and stop it from being the energy field dancing and make it into what you think it should be. I mean, do that, but then let go, disengage. That is how we work. We see patterns dancing, we name one nexus point, then let go of it. Let it dissolve, give it away, then see what comes up next. That allows for all opportunities. It's the fixedness that the flower dissolves. And the next one. This one. Okay. And once there is an understanding of the livingness of everything, not just your being, which is what the flower said, then there begins to be an awareness of the flow of how things move together. So, no matter what position is shining in the, you know, like when you see cause and effect like this, it's like looking at stars in the sky at night. All these lights singing. Whatever position is singing, that same sense of the grace of how the harmony of the energy in which they're singing. Okay, I'm not saying this right. I'll try again. I'll give you an example of the incense. And I did a lot of work with this one particular teacher, perhaps you know Nojog and Pache. I don't know someone in here. Well, he's a character, you know. He's really a character. And talk about playing the energies. My dear. Now, in these days where this story takes place, my mother loves to tell stories, and I think it's genetic. I was one of the three people who used to write out lecture notes and make them available to the group. And I was also the person who was responsible for writing out the sadhanas. You know those written copies of one course that you get. Most of them were done by me in those days. And they're still being passed now. Some of them could use a little correction, but most of them are excellent. And there was another person who really knew that he was better suited to do a lot of the work that I was doing than I was. Now, the third person who did a lot of publishing had just put out a book of this teacher, Namjo Rinpoche, of a course he gave. And he had just received the book. And that Wangkor had just happened, and he had invited me to stay after the Wangkor and have coffee with him. And then somebody handed him this book, and he had asked the other person, in those days he used to drink expensive wines, to check the contents of his wine cellar. So there is a fireplace here. There is a couch here. Right? The wine cellar is here. He puts the coffee on the table. He actually brings me the coffee. Puts it on the table in front of me. Sits down beside me on the couch. We're facing the fireplace, and somebody walks up and gives him the book. "Oh, ho, ho," he says. And he starts going through it. "Oh, clever fellow," he says, you know. And he over here is going through the wine cellar, checking to see what's there, right? With his ears like this, right? Going across the room. Whoa, what's going on? Really knowing that he should really be there on the couch for us. Now, this is a master of weaving energies, right? Being able to act appropriately no matter what energy is happening without war. He's incredible. I can just watch it. So he's saying, we're going through the book, and then we go back, and there's a photograph in the front of Namjo Rinpoche standing with his hand up and this pink flowers all around him. And he says, "What do you think of the picture?" I said, "It's kind of pink." He says, in a lower voice, "It is rather pink, isn't it?" So he hears, "What do you think of the picture? It's kind of pink." Mutter, mutter, mutter. The ears, you can feel the ears. Then I said, loud enough for he to hear it, "Besides, you told me that you didn't want to picture yourself in any books." And he says, "That's right, I did." No, really sought quietly. "That's right, I did." So he can hear that. And he says, "But then again," he stands up and says, "Why not?" So he hears, "But I thought you told me you didn't want to picture yourself in the book." And slight pause, he stands up and says, "Why not?" Now, isn't that beautiful? And meanwhile, I'm watching him do all this, and I'm thinking, "Oh, you are slick." Which is my problem. But really what it is giving to everybody. Appropriately. Really, if you do this with love, it is that the fullest degree of this is allowing all beings to pursue their thirst and kill it. Understand? And this isn't always wise, but it's one of the aspects. Because of knowing the smell of bodhicitta, because of knowing the sweet perfume of the mind that is awakening, to always act appropriately with what is present. So very rarely do you need to actually stop an action. You just know how to move with it appropriate to its unfolding. Just like incense does with the air. It's a very interesting bowl, isn't it?
Is that where that phrase, skillful action?
I think, yeah. I think that is definitely to go for life. You cannot do that if you do not know the energies of aspiration, the seeds of karma that are ripening, and the present supporting circumstances. So you have to have done some work with flowers. And you cannot work with flowers until you pay attention to what is present. Who is it that is here? And you cannot pay attention to what is present unless you cut off the desire that takes you out of the present. You cannot do any of these offerings until you start from the first. These are the offerings the whole life makes in order to come to a point of oneness with what is really spiritual. That's what these bowls are. These bowls are your practice on the outer realm. These are the outer offerings. They are profound. They are profound. If you just took one a day and worked them, you know, for a week, you'd have a good week. So then, of course, is the next one, which is what?
Light.
Yeah. I see the light. And when you know that's light, you know, light and light, it just moves out, doesn't it? It just increases, it just goes. And, clarity, more understanding, more clarity. And it's unconditional. The light doesn't shine more, you know, the sun doesn't shine a little more on your neighbor's grass than it does on yours, even if you do think so on some days. It doesn't. The next bowl. The incense is like the power of the paramis, the power of acting with morality. The scented water is the seeing that in everyone around you. Where the one drop of perfume and the whole ocean of consciousness is changed. Seeing the bodhicitta in all beings. So you see, when that light arises, it is really like the walls of only seeing self start to go down. So then you're not holding yourself as an object and the world as a subject. You're not caught in that duality, making yourself real in relation to the outer. These are called the outer offerings. This is such a beautiful teaching. Like, you know, I harp on it a lot, but there's reason. So with the light begins a change. Now you look at others with the same protectiveness in a way, or sense of possessiveness, or, you know, same sense of intimacy as you feel about yourself. Same sense of livingness. And see how that would change things. And then, food. What is nourishing? What is nourishing us? What is nourishing? What is it I am eating? What is it I am providing as food? Because life eats life, what am I eating and what am I feeding? an awareness of the interactive chain of cause and effect. So as the consciousness, the drop of water pressing into the consciousness of the bodhisattva, the bodhicitta, conscious of that, seeing that everywhere. And the food is the continuous interdependent origination. Like it's like continuously the food chain. Okay. And at that point of seeing that, then there can no longer be treating the material world, the outer realm, the realm in time, as something worth clinging to. At that point, one no longer is caught by what are called the eight worldly dharmas. Gain and loss, fame and notoriety, pleasure and pain. I said them in the order I don't usually, so, but anyway, we'll get to them later. Or you can look them up yourself, the eight worldly dharmas. At this point, you have understood that there isn't a fixed position. You have offered the outer. You have offered your usual motive of clinging to the outer. You have offered that. You have turned the face to the sacred. You have made sacrifice. So at this point, this world no longer looks like something for you to try to do something in. You know? You're not becoming. You're not in the next moment. The ambition is no longer set on worldly attainment. Right? This world then is symbolized as a graveyard. Because it is to you, your ambition is dead to what is presented by this world. Now your ambition is going to something other. In the center of the graveyard, a figure sits. Who is that? Rinpoche. What's he doing? He's ringing a bell. At this point, is the bell. This means at this point, you hear the real mind of Guru, the one who hears. Often ringing the bell in the graveyard, ringing the bell in the midst of the whole dance of this outer world is Guru Rinpoche ringing the bell. Now, instead of looking at the objects of the graveyard as if they were wonderful, you're looking at them as they are, not treating them with disrespect, but hearing the bell. Know there is something other. And the bell signifies the beginning of the inner rock. Which we can talk about tomorrow. Mm-hmm.
Seriously, what was that? The bell signifies what?
The beginning, that the consciousness now can turn to the inner offerings. There are outer, inner, secret offerings. I mean, there are more than that, but that's the three that are usually spoken of. The outer offerings, inner offerings, and the secret offerings. So I've just talked about the outer offerings, which are what are here. This is the process of beginning to orient yourself toward changing the motive. From blindness to compassion. That's called the seven offerings. So you make the seven offerings. Or you do them all. see which one is appropriate at any time. I did this for quite a while, and I recommend it to you. I like taking one for a day and just making a focus for the day, performing water for drinking. So whenever thirst, desire arises, just give it a drink. And see what works and what doesn't. What kind of drink works and what doesn't. And what the circumstances are for a drink to work on this time but not for that time. Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints? In Tara practice, particularly green Tara, the offerings are extremely important. You usually do 3 rounds of offerings when you do a Tara puja. And Tara is the one who provides all desires. Whatever you want will arise from the practice of Tara. Well, I guess so, eh? You're performing this, so. Right? Because they are potent. If you have some consciousness of what the symbols represent, the potency increases. But somewhere in you, you do have some consciousness. So if you are unconsciously conscious, it will still work. Potency increases the more consciously you evoke a law. A law is a law. And somewhere in your being, because you are law, there is an awareness of law. So even without, you know, even with you know, there is something that is aware, however buried under mass murder or seeds of karma or whatever it may be. And something will move from that. But it could take a while. Mind is focused on the potency of the symbol and the aspiration is present. Then you got the aspiration. You got the seeds of karma ripening. And you're trying to act in accord with the present supporting circumstances to make that occur. So it speeds it up. It's not salt. No. It was these seeds of karma that confused me. Would have been okay anyway. Yeah. I had Tibetan tea for a long time. Oh, you better sing a folk song now. Mm-hmm. How about row, row, row your boat? That's about right, isn't it?
Merrily, 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 life is but a dream.
True.
Row, row, row your boat. gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream.
Isn't that a good folk song?
Folk singing, eh?
Yeah. Merrily, merrily, merrily. That's compassionate, kindness. Life is but a dream that's unclean. Row, row, row your boat, that's awareness. Be here, be here. So what are you going to do? Just walk around listening to that. That's the whole of the path.
And it's the right weekend, too.
Anything else? Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Our music critics?
Oh, good.
Then shall we leave it at that for tonight? That's good enough. And I recommend you bring notebooks because tomorrow night I'll talk about the inner offerings. You might want to write this stuff down. It could be useful. I know Otto is taking notes, and you can always hit up Otto. It's good for you to write them down too. It's very kind of Otto to do this for you. It's good for you to exercise your own desire nature. Not be too North American. So you see that there's this beautiful gold light in your heart. It's gorgeous. Quite wonderful. Just shines out through your whole chest. Goes down your arms and legs, through your head. Pours out your pores in all directions. It moves through walls, through ceilings. Washes everywhere, wherever there is difficulty due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, the light just washes it temporarily. You think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, you share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, you share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you. M&M's, I mean.